Nice. Okay. So we had the so we had so the second link of the dependent arising, the link of compositional factors. It is karma, and specifically, so specifically throwing karma, the karma that is referred. So that throwing karma is the karma that has the power to determine a type of rebirth. So it can throw us or project a type of rebirth. And so karma has the four characteristics that what is referred to as the four general characteristics of karma. General because they apply equally to positive karma as well as to harmful karma. And here we had the first characteristic of the definiteness of karma, which refers to the which refers to the fact that so happiness arises from virtuous karma, and suffering arises from a harmful karma. That means, so when if we create a harmful action, so we create a harmful action, and so it occasionally it does happen that as a that you know as an immediate result of that harmful action, some worldly happiness is achieved. So that does happen, but so then it's good to keep in mind so that worldly happiness, it is not the karmic result of that action. So like we said before, you know, with for example with the drug dealer, so even if the drug dealer is successful and can amass wealth, so the wealth, you know, it is in it is it does come about through the selling of drugs, so through a harmful action, but it is not the karmic result of that action. So that's important to keep in mind. So it is the karmic result of having practiced generosity in the past. Generosity. So the karmic result of the action of selling drugs, so that will be some suffering result that will then come about in the in the future. Similarly, okay, then but I think we have to go on. Then so then what are the other the other three general characteristics of karma? Yes? Karma multiplies, yes. So the increasing effect of karma. So the increasing characteristic of karma, it means that so the karmic potential that is left on the mind stream has this kind of self-dynamic, you know, where it becomes stronger over time. So that's what it is, that's what it refers to. Yes? Yes. 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 So because the karmic imprint becomes stronger, so the result, it also becomes stronger. Yes?
So is that to say
Yes.
So that works both way for virtue effects?
Yes. So that's why it is advised and also not to disregard even small virtuous actions. Yes?
I'm just wondering rather that to give a little hope, it increases, it multiplies if it is not purified.
Yes, so if it is left alone, so if it meets with adverse conditions, it doesn't multiply. So, for example, the increasing effect of harmful karma can be stopped by reciting the short Vajrasattva mantra 21 times. Yes? Okay. Bhakta, yes. Well, so the karmic seed, it is what is in Tibetan referred to as a bhakchak, and so there's a great variety of translations for bhakchak, such as imprint, tendency, a potential, propensity, and they're all correct, actually. They're all correct. So what is good to keep in mind is that that a karmic potential has four different types of results. I was going to get to that later. And so that what we normally associate with the karmic result, that is usually the result similar to the action. Not like generosity from wealth. But there are also other karmic results, such as the action similar to the cause. Meaning that by practicing generosity, we develop a propensity, so it becomes easier to then again practice generosity. And the other way around.
So I guess when you say the imprint multiplies, I'm just trying to
guess what it is. Yes. Yeah, that is a very good question. I think it refers more to the to the potential of the karma in relation to the ripening result and the result similar to the cause, like the experience similar to the cause.
So
the actual fruition itself. Yeah, I don't think it refers to the to the tendency. No, I don't think that just by having carried out one action once, then the potential, or like the propensity to carry out that action, would increase all the time. I don't think so. Yeah. And then what else do we have? So we had the definiteness of karma and the increasing characteristic of karma. Yes?
If you don't create the cause, then you won't experience the result.
So if you don't create the cause, you will not experience the result, yes? So that's very important also in many ways, because it means, on the one hand, when we experience a result, so we wouldn't experience that result if we hadn't created the causes. And the other way around, if we want to experience a result, then we have to create the causes. So we cannot, the implication being, we cannot expect a result if we don't create the causes. So one can tie that in also with what we were briefly talking about yesterday. So we always, with the motivation to have happiness, we create an innumerable amount of actions, so an innumerable amount of causes. But because we don't create the right causes, so then that happiness that we aspire to, that is somehow elusive. So we, if all these actions that we carried out with the intent to be happy, if they would create the actual cause to be happy, because we have already, even in one day we carry out innumerable actions, then we would have to have, the perfect true happiness already. And then what is the last characteristic? No. So karma can be purified, but that is not the characteristic. So that would be the definiteness.
Really? I always thought that too, but then I felt like I learned on it is separate.
No. That was the aspect of definiteness. So that happiness needs as a cause virtue. So even if we, even on a hot day, and we, a cool breeze comes and we experience that cool breeze as refreshing, that would be the result of a virtuous karma. So that is the definite aspect. Yes? Sure. Well, whether they do it from the heart or not, we don't know. There would be something, actually, virtue, like generosity, generosity is regarded as a natural virtue. That means, even if the motivation is inferior, because in the end, you see, in the end, we have to let go. So there has to be, in the mind, we have to let go from the object. Otherwise it will be a situation, so we want to give $1, but we can't quite let it doesn't fall, into the hat, because there has to happen something internal has to happen with generosity. So they say, even if our motivation is inferior, there will always be some root virtue. But of course, there can be even from the virtuous motivation for generosity. So it can vary. So one person may give. But they give mainly with the idea of wanting to better their own future life. So that is, from the point of view of karma, it is not the highest motivation, but it is still a positive motivation. Then other people, they may give because they want to... they want to build up positive potential to attain liberation. And then yet others again, they practice generosity with the wish of wanting to attain complete enlightenment for the welfare of others. So there can be different motivations. And then, of course, the result, that will greatly depend on the motivation. So in Buddhism there's a great emphasis is placed on the motivation, that's for sure. But what is the fourth characteristic? You tried to distract me, but it didn't. It didn't work. So we have got the definiteness, and we got the increasing, and we got the not experiencing the result of an action that one has not created. So which one is missing? One must experience. There's no such thing as must, because, as we said, if it's a non-virtuous karma, then it can be purified, and positive karma can be harmed by anger, for example. The fourth aspect of karma is that karma doesn't. The power of karma does not dissipate by itself. So if the karma is left alone, you see, we may think, I carried out the action, it's already a long time ago. And then we may also think, nobody knows about it. I can hardly remember it. And probably the karma has disappeared. So it's not like that. So if karma is left alone, it does not disappear by itself. That's the thing. So that's the fourth characteristic. No matter how long it takes. So from the point of view of lifetimes, even if it is many, many thousands or millions of lifetimes, so the karma does not disappear by itself. Yes. Yep. 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 Yes. No, no. That's then that comes about because of the object. If the object is a bodhisattva or a Buddha, then but then even one thought of anger is enough. So, but because we don't know who is a bodhisattva, so it's good to be careful. Yeah, so the question of the past karma and purifying the past karma, so that comes up. So one obvious immediate reason is, see that the karma can ripen. So our situation can be perfectly all right, and so to the outward perception it is, and all at once, so it, you know, as it happens so often, you know, something bad happens, such as a sickness or death or, you know, so whatever. You know, for example, one may have a good working situation, job situation, so one feels quite financially secure, and then out of the blue, you know, the company goes broke, for example, or one is terminated. Or, you know, one enjoys all one's life, one enjoys good health, and then all at once, one has some sickness. So in order to avoid this type of situations, so that's one reason why one is advised to purify one's karma from past lifetimes, because it is there. But it doesn't all ripen immediately, no, all together. So, when karma can be comparatively easy purified before it has been ripened, before it ripens. Once karma has ripened, it's very, very hard, if impossible, to purify. Like we know, so the. To purify karma, when we read through the explanations, so the dharma is incredibly powerful. The positive actions, if we simplify, so positive actions, so they're very, very powerful, karmically speaking. And also, then specifically, just different methods for purification or dharma practice. So it's very powerful, and karma can be purified comparatively easy before it has ripened. The problem is we have so many karmas, so that's why it takes, why we have to practice a lot. But just from the point of view of one karma, so you said that even like the recitation of one Om Mani Padme Hum mantra, or one meditation on love and compassion, so that can purify, there's then aeons, like many, many years of negative karma. So there are many explanations like that which clearly indicate that the Dharma practice is very powerful, And that karma can be purified, you know, quite easily before it has ripened. So the problem is only that there is so much karma, that's why we need to practice so much. Now once karma has ripened, so that we know also from our experience, you know, once karma has actually ripened, so then to purify, that is very, very hard. Not necessarily, because you know some karmas they can produce results over many lifetimes. So just because we experience one result of the karma, that does not mean that that because of that the karma is exhausted. Well, like for example, if somebody like the karma to have a sickness, so that could be comparatively easy purified before it has ripened. Then once it has ripened, then to purify that karma, that's very hard. Yeah. Sorry.
Someone gets sick. Mm-hmm.
Well, one person, so there, it's...
The reason I ask is sometimes something bad will happen.
Yeah.
And I'll do a purification, and I know I haven't changed the karma that's already happened.
Okay.
Suddenly I'm not suffering from it anymore. So did okay. I go back and purify that karma, or is it a new one I purified?
One of my teachers, he has said, for example, with the Vajrasattva purification, he said, there are different indications that, like signs that show that karma has been purified. So he says, one of the most important signs that karma has been purified, or one definite sign that karma has been purified, is if the meditation generates a sense of well-being. So, for example, if before the start of the meditation, maybe we were worried or we didn't feel so well and so forth, or mentally unhappy, but then through the meditation something changes and we feel mentally happy, then that is one of the a certain indication that karma has been purified. So, but somebody like if karma ripens. For a physical sickness, then how the person deals with that sickness, that's separate. So for some people, then they're also, if they don't have the methods, so usually if a person doesn't have some religious or philosophical training, then usually the mind is overwhelmed by the physical sickness and they also become mentally very unhappy. So people that usually have some philosophical or religious training, so then they're usually better able to cope with the sickness. So even some then they're even able to be mentally happy even though they have an incredible, terrible physical sickness. Sometimes they are much more happy than the people that are healthy. So that the person that is healthy thinks, oh, I wish I would be like that person. That's good. That can happen. Yeah, so... Then it's good to stop here so we can have a short dedication if you like. So first of all, we can meditate briefly on rejoicing. No, reflecting really on the fact, you know, how incredible it is. So to that one took the time, and then that one had the opportunity to discuss these topics, you know, think about these topics. So then we can read some of the dedication prayers. So, okay. So due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel Bodhicitta that has not arisen arise and grow, and may that which has arisen not diminish but increase more and more. Then in the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. You who uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manchunath's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplish magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, Savior of myself and others, your disciples, please live long. Thank you very much.